Welcome back to the Motherlode Show. I am Jackson Dunn here with you in the 88.3 studios. I've got some interesting stuff to talk about, and actually I want to talk about the art of talking. Specifically, I want to talk about the information problem. It's a problem that's pervaded both economics, but also information sharing for a long time. And the idea is this, that a lot of the reason there is inefficiency, a lot of the reason that there is misunderstanding and loss of productivity in our society is because we cannot communicate effectively. Specifically, we're not able to communicate effectively about things that are important and that help us make good decisions. I want to talk about how the internet has both helped us and hurt us in that way, and how as information grows, we're actually losing some of the information that we need for our daily lives. So to get us started, I want to talk a little bit about some tech. I promise I'm not going to go too in-depth here. It is kind of interesting, though, so if you ever want to do any study on it later on, it's only worth it. But the way the internet was originally created, it was created by an inventor named Tim Berners-Lee, who created the concept, but specifically DARPA, the defense group from the United States, put together most of the working pieces of the internet and put out the first working version of the internet. One of the things that they realized when they first made a system of machines that could talk to each other, because that's really what the internet is a way to get machines to be able to talk to each other without so much human intervention, as we might need in a telephone system or something of the sort, was they would need to name each computer so that each computer could call another computer, could use its specific identifier, and could receive information from it and know where it came from. The way that they did this was by creating what is called a protocol. It's basically a name written in specific binary code that a computer can understand. And this name was given a certain amount of digits or bits that can be used to name a computer. And whenever a computer sees a specific sequence of numbers, it knows that it is a name of another computer that is attempting to talk to it. And similar to you having your name, your maybe Sam or your Jack or your Tim, the idea is that you have a certain amount of letters, and when someone says your name, you know to pay attention to them and you can receive information from them. The same is true with computers, and one of the first systems that they created was called IPv4. Now, this system was basically the idea that you had four different sets of digits that you would use to name a computer so that it could talk to other computers. And at the time that the internet was created, this was thought to be more than sufficient for anything we could use computers for. There are 4 billion different unique names that you can create using the IPv4 system. And so people, when they first started making the internet, decided, okay, that's probably more than we'll ever use. You know, there's barely 4 billion people who can afford a computer, and there wasn't any concern that there would even be that many around. Most people thought the internet was kind of a gimmick, or something that would be just defense technology, not really a consumer technology as we know it. But as more and more devices went online, people realized that, no, there's no way that this will work. There's no way that we'll have only 4 billion devices. And so they had to create a new naming system to name computers so that they could talk to a larger number of computers, basically made up different letters for computers to understand to talk to each other. And this system, which is now online and which is now what most people use for their devices, is called IPv6. Now, all of this is very technical, very, very conceptual, and I know that if you're not into computers, this probably doesn't make a whole lot of sense to you. But let me tell you why I'm bringing this up. The amount of computers that can go on to the IPv6 system is simply mind-boggling. It's something on the order of 2 to the 128th power. Computers can go on to the IPv6 system. So from a couple of billion to more than I even really have a good way of expressing. It's a huge amount of computers, certainly more than we can make in devices, probably in our entire lifetimes. And this system seems to be working quite well in helping us communicate. And what it's done is it's opened up a huge amount of communication among devices across the world. And nowadays, we even have devices that aren't really being used as computers. We have smartwatches, and we have smart speakers, and we have smart home appliances. You know, you have your smart toaster. I'm not even kidding. There is such a thing. A fun fact, a smart toaster actually has more processor power than the moon lander that we went to the moon the first time in. Just a funny thing, but that's how prevalent the internet has gotten, is to the point that we have everything connected to the internet. And we can, because we now have a system that can support it. Now, we're going to talk about the information problem. This is what I started out the podcast with, talking a little bit about what information are we missing in our society, and specifically, what information is necessary for a society to run efficiently. In economics, the information problem was an idea that consumers and producers of products know different things. So for somebody, let's say, who goes into a restaurant, I heard this pretty good example, someone who goes into a restaurant has to trust that the restaurant is going to clean their equipment, is not going to leave food out and cause food poisoning for their consumers. If there is no oversight, if there's nobody who's going to go in and inspect that kitchen, if there's nobody who's going to go in and check and make sure that kitchen is clean, there's probably less people who are going to eat out at restaurants because they're not going to be sure, is this restaurant a clean one? But if you have a government that has to go in and make sure that people are following the health codes and aren't having any specific health violations, then you can't necessarily trust the business to just do it by itself. But with that oversight, you can reasonably know that a business is following certain health protocol, and therefore you're going to have more business. This is also true of stock exchanges. The reason why you can't have insider trading, which is if you're inside of a company, you can't trade stocks based on the knowledge that you have from inside of the company. The reason why is the reverse. If you have more information than most consumers, then you're able to game the system. This is a system, the stock market is a system based on uncertainty, right? You buy and sell the uncertainty of other people who are using that market. So you have a stock and you're going to gamble on whether or not it's going to do well. And the stock market can't grow without this, because if a company is going to do poorly, everyone's going to hold on to their money. If a company is going to do well, they're going to overinflate the value of that company because everyone's going to be buying into that company. It's only because there is some uncertainty about how well a company will do that it keeps the system from basically booming every time a business does well and then crashing every time a business does poorly. So this information problem has always been a big part of business. And it's also been a big part of inefficiency. A lot of businesses really try hard to get rid of information gaps that can cause their business to lose out on money. If you don't know who your clients are supposed to be, you can't go out and advertise effectively to them. And we've seen this, right, in the information age. As more and more devices go online, a lot of companies are getting into hot water. Companies like Google or Facebook are getting into hot water because they're recording you. They're getting information on you, and they're using it to try to fine-tune their advertisement to your preferences. And this is exactly the information problem. They have learned to solve this. And the reason why they're such huge companies is because they're profiting on the inefficiency that used to be in the system. They're taking that away, and in exchange, they're making a lot of money for it. So even if these companies are offering a, quote, free product, they're actually sucking a significant amount of money out of the economy in terms of making things more efficient, and then that excess, that inefficient extra that we'd been spending for a long time, they're sucking up for themselves. This is, again, not necessarily a bad thing, but it is indicative of how big this information problem really is. Now, the information problem can go the other way as well. You can have too much information. And as we're seeing with the new IPv6 system, but also in general, with more and more people being connected and online and able to spread their ideas, we oftentimes have a plethora of information, but no good way to actually talk to each other. There have been studies that have shown that our generation, over the last 10 years maybe, are the most lonely people around. They're considerably more lonely, teenagers of today, if they do studies, and it's difficult to tell from a study, but nevertheless, people today are more lonely than they were 10 years ago. And the reason is because with all of this talking, all of these machines that are able to talk to each other, all of this information, and as podcasts go online, and as people start being able to share their ideas on social media, all of that information goes into a huge pool, into a huge sea of information. And the reverse problem happens where you can literally, because there's so much information out there, just cherry pick the information that you want to hear, the information you want to listen to. But you aren't necessarily picking the information that is relevant or that you need. And so it's very easy to find on the internet. It's actually way, way, way too easy to find information that confirms your own biases or confirms the things that you thought. And it's much, much harder to figure out information that tells you the truth about an idea. The rise of fake news, I think, is in direct correlation to the rise of internet communication. The internet can communicate on such an efficient level, and so many devices now talk to each other, that to create fake news is very easy, but it's not that creating it is more easy than it was before. What is easy is if you know how to game the system, if you know how to make your content stand out in a sea of conflicting information, if you know how to make yourself seem like a legitimate source, when everyone else is talking and trying to convince you that they're a legitimate source, you can create a following and you can create a trust level that you don't necessarily deserve. And certainly there are companies that are capitalizing on this, right? That are creating large amounts of people behind them based on sensationalist news or sensationalist media, not actually bringing you a whole lot of information, but certainly appealing to what you want to hear. And because they're a company that has done well at gaming the system, at learning how to target their advertisements to you, at learning how to get your information and to bridge the information gap, to cut through the sea of smaller names, if you will, on the internet, they seem to have a trust level that is much larger because they seem to have people who are supporting them behind them. When in actuality, with so many machines talking to each other, if you can just get a certain amount of machines talking about you, right? If you can get a certain amount of news aggregators talking about you, if you can show up in enough people's social media feeds, it sounds like you have a lot more support than you really do. A company that I think of when I think of this kind of rise of fake news information is Vox. Vox is a magazine that could be probably accurately described as a tabloid, right? They're very similar to something like a National Enquirer or one of those things that you'll pick up at the supermarket, or if you're 90, you'll pick up at the supermarket. People nowadays don't really pick up magazines at the supermarket like they used to, but still, you get the point. Vox is a company that has made a lot of money, not on really providing any news, right? They don't do a whole lot. They're mostly celebrity gossip. But what they do is they have a very robust opinion section. And so they get their opinions out there, and I've seen a lot of their opinion pieces be touted as front page news on the front of Google or of Bing, which is actually what I use more often. And it's the opinion on a news story that becomes the reality for a lot of people who are reading the news. And it's simply because Vox is very good at, one, creating clickbait titles, things that people want to click on. But even more so, being able to game the machine system, being able to game the advertising system to put their stuff on the front page, even though it really isn't, as far as information's concerned, deserving of that. And so they're creating a whole new type of inefficiency, a whole new type of problem in the information society, which is that the information that we're getting is not necessarily accurate. And the accurate information is out there like never before. You know, maybe 20 years back, it would have been pretty nice and most people had check engine lights on their cars. Nowadays, you have check engine lights and oftentimes an LCD screen that'll tell you what's wrong with your car. And certainly a mechanic, if they plug into the computer in your car, can immediately download the error code that the engine is producing. The engine basically records anything that goes wrong with it. And a technician could pull that off and pretty quickly and accurately determine what's wrong with your engine. So something that might have taken a couple of hours before to diagnose, or even a day or two to diagnose in a car, can be done in only a couple of minutes by reading the error code. So this information is very good. But now think about, if your car is putting out so much information, like let's say a self-driving car from Tesla. So a self-driving car from Tesla crashes. It's now much more difficult because of the amount of information to determine whether or not it's the self-driving software that crashed the car, whether it's a broken sensor on the car that crashed the car, whether it's the engine that crashed the car. And yes, we have all of this information, but now we need other computers to filter that information and tell us what is relevant, to tell us what the problem really is. And because we have this computing power, a lot of people are relying on others and relying on computers to filter out bad information and give them the good. But that's not the way that human life works. You see, one of the things that makes an information society a problematic society is that humans are only designed to be able to process a certain amount of useful information. Most of the stuff that goes into your brain is actually ignored. Like the way that your feet feel most of the time. Unless your feet are hurting you, you don't really notice the way your feet feel as you walk around. You might kind of think about it for a second, but it drifts away. You don't think about breathing all the time. Now maybe you are, because I just said it. But you don't think about taking your breaths. Those are just things that happen naturally. You know, you don't think about the way that your scalp feels, unless it's hurting or unless it's itchy or something like that. This information just goes into the back, and your brain is very efficient at filtering out what is important. But there are people, we call them epileptics, who actually have a problem when their brain is unable to process all the information that comes in from their senses. And in an epileptic's brain, what happens is all this glut of information comes in and the brain is unable to process it. And so it basically creates chaos within the brain. And we obviously know the symptoms of an epileptic brain, where people will have seizures. Basically, that's the same as if your computer freezes. Yeah, people aren't computers, but you get the point. It's an information overload and it causes people to break down. And the same is true with all of the information that we would have to process to get the truth in the information society of today. We can look at how many podcasts there are, and I've talked about this early on in the podcast. From what I've heard, it's several hundred million podcasts that are out on the major podcast aggregators of today. And most of those podcasts get no more than one listener. Very few people listen to any given podcast. And there are a couple of them that are very popular, obviously. But with all that information, who has the time or the energy to invest in trying to figure it out? And so we always gravitate towards the most popular people, towards the most popular opinions. But what ends up happening is if popular opinions are able to game the system, to make themselves look like they're more popular than they are, we end up getting a bit of a confirmation bias in many cases, where the things that we like, the things that we would normally look at, because podcasts or these aggregators will cater to our needs, our wishes, our wants, we end up believing that our wishes and our wants are the most important thing in life. And our confirmation bias is only strengthened by the people that we listen to, who are all the people we like, who are all the people who have interesting content to us. And so we miss out on the boring and the mundane, but the important. This is true, I think, of church attendance. And I don't necessarily suggest church attendance for people. I know that a lot of Christians do. And it is good. It is good to have people around you who believe like you. But I don't know that it's specifically as important as a personal relationship with God. All the same, there are a lot of people who are leaving church because it's boring, because it's mundane. And so what pastors try to do is they try to make it too exciting. You know, there are those TV pastors, Joel Osteen or something like that, who will get on with Kanye West and who will preach a prosperity gospel where if you follow God and if you're a good person, you get wealth and riches and happiness. And it isn't really biblical. It isn't really the truth, but he's trying to cater to people. He's trying to make people listen to him in an information age. And so he makes people say, okay, if you do it my way, if you do it this way, you'll be happy. You'll feel good. The things that people want to hear. And so he's popular because he says the things that people want to hear. But most of the inconvenient truths, the real inconvenient truths, not the Al Gore climate change inconvenient truths, which frankly is being rammed down our throat at a level which makes me think that it's a bunch of confirmation bias in many cases. And this is even coming from an environmental scientist who certainly believes in the legitimacy of conservation. But we get this confirmation bias. And we miss out on the real important details that are in the boring and the mundane. To take the environmental example, there are some very, I think, accomplished environmentalists, including Nir Shaviv and the Tel Aviv University, who talk about the fact that climate change, as we popularly know it, is not as big an issue as we think because it's also being driven by the sun cycle, and it's something that we can't really control. And as the amount of carbon dioxide goes up in our atmosphere, so does the amount of plant life that can grow, and it grows quicker and quicker and quicker as there's more carbon dioxide, because that's what plants, right, eat, if you will, out of the air. But you don't hear this if you read the news. And the reason why is because it's not clickbait. It isn't confirmation bias. It doesn't make you think that there's a huge problem or a reason to follow this author or to follow this scientific group or to follow a government, whatever group is pushing stuff. And we miss out on the fact that actually, even though there are problems with pollution, that there are a lot of things we can't control and that we shouldn't be worried. We shouldn't be afraid. We shouldn't constantly go around like our hair's on fire about a problem that we can't fix on a daily basis. And this is true about everything. We hear about all of these white supremacist groups. And believe me, there are racist people. There are bad people out there. Bad white supremacist groups out there, right? Lots of bad stuff. But these groups always get more attention than they deserve, than they need, because people want to seem like there's a problem. And because they think there might be a problem, they have their biases confirmed by what they read. And so they continue to read those kind of sources, which further confirm their biases as the computer tries to learn what they're interested in. And as groups and people and clickbait articles try to learn what they're interested in, cater to them. And so everyone thinks there's a way bigger problem than there is. But the biggest problem, I think, is an information problem, that people are not willing to look at the boring and the mundane. And with so much talking out there that we simply cannot process all of the noise to listen to what's truly important and to talk to the people who are truly important, to talk to family and have discussions. And over Thanksgiving, this was something that I actually experienced a little because, you know, families talk about things and you've heard the stereotype of families talking politics over Thanksgiving. I don't think people do as much as they say because people don't really know how to communicate. And this is part of that loneliness that I was talking about. People don't know how to communicate well with people around them because they're so used to having their biases confirmed that they don't really have a way to healthily handle criticism or healthily handle different ideas. So yeah, you know what? I disagree with a lot of my family over Thanksgiving. That's fine. I disagree with a lot of them over politics or life or religion or whatever the topic is. But it doesn't mean that I can't have a good discussion with them, and that's something that I've always appreciated. But it's something we need to work on, because it's easy, with so much talking, so much information, so much music and culture and life and, oh, you know, oh my, there's everything all over the place. We miss out on what's important. And we're not willing to listen to what's important, because it's boring, because it's mundane, because it doesn't fit our interests. And we're so used to having our interests catered to that we think they're the most important thing in the world. And they're just not. I was talking to somebody who is having a little bit of a struggle over the weekend, and I know I got to leave here in just a moment. I'm running out of time, but who is dealing with a really tough time in their life. They were dealing with some emotional abuse from parents, and they told me that they thought that they were transgender because of it. And I told them, wait, look, I know this is what bias has been confirmed for you. This is what you hear in TV, what you read on social media. But the problem isn't you, it's your parents. Someone's hurting you. Someone's calling you bad names. Someone's saying that you're wrong, that you're a mistake, that you're not legitimate because you're different. But that's not true. The problem is them, not you. And it's easy for a clickbait article to say the problem is you, to say that you have to fix yourself. And in many cases, you do have to fix yourself. But in this case, it wasn't his problem. His problem was with a lack of confidence and people continually telling him that something was wrong with him. And he didn't know where to find the correct information. That things were going to be okay. He didn't have to fix himself. Someone had to fix his situation. He needed help with his situation. And so with all of this information going through our brains, the best way to get the information you need is to turn off the spigot. Walk away for a little while from the social media, from the confirmation bias. Talk to some people. Disagree with some people and be polite and mature about it. You don't have to agree with them, even if you think that they're bad people. But learn from them. Because in the boring or the mundane or the unpleasant, you might actually find some information that will really help your life. And what more can you ask, right? This is the Motherlode Show. I'm Jackson Dunn on 88.3 FM, Castbox.fm, and Anchor.fm, my home. We will be back next week with some more great content. Thank you so much for listening.